Yes, my name is Amanda. I'm here with my very lovely mother.
Hi, I'm Jeanette.
And today we are going to be doing a deep dive into the Japan Pavilion in Epcot. So we kind of have this series on our podcast where we've been deep diving into all the different Epcot pavilions. But this week we're going to do Japan. I'm super excited because there was actually a lot of information I found on Japan and some things that we could talk about that's more historical on Japan, which is super cool. I will say I did try to look up the pronunciations of a lot of these places. Mm-hmm. I do not speak Japanese, and so my pronunciations are going to have that thick, heavy American accent. So get ready, everyone, for me to butcher every single Japanese word. So I do want to apologize in advance for any mispronunciations that I do have. I actually try to write down how to pronounce some of these words. So I'm trying, but just know okay. I'm definitely just trying my best here. And I will also, of course, have all the links where I found a lot of my information in the description of this podcast episode. All right, so the Japan Pavilion. This is one of the original pavilions opening in Epcot on October 1st, 1982. When you first arrive in the pavilion, the first shining thing that you're going to see is actually in the World Showcase Lagoon. This is called, in Japanese, the Ikusuzuma Jinja, which is a Shinto shrine on the island of Ikusuzuma, popularly known as Miyajima, which is best known for its floating, in quotes, torii. A torii is a gate in Japan, so that's kind of that red gate that's in the World Showcase Lagoon. It looks exactly the same as the gate as the Shinto shrine on the island of Ikusuzuma. So in Japan, Shinto and Buddhism are the main two practice religions in Japan. It's almost like it's not necessarily 50-50. Shinto seems to be the more popular religion in Japan, dating back to like ancient Japanese times. And then Buddhism was introduced into Japan. I say like modern age, but it's like the 6th century. It was 6th or 7th century introduced to Japan. But those are the two main religions that are within Japanese culture. And so this shrine, there's lots of different types of torii, these types of gates throughout Japan. But this specific one is one of the most famous ones. Is in the city, the Ikusuzuma Jinja is in the city of Hatsukaiji, Hiroshima Prefecture in Japan. The shrine complex is listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and the Japanese government has designated several buildings and possessions as national treasures in this city. The Ikusuzuma Shrine is one of Japan's most popular tourist attractions, and the Ikusuzuma Jinja was the chief Shinto shrine of the Aki Province. The shrine is one of the great shrines of the Aki Province, along with the Take Shrine and the Hayantani Shrine. The shrine is also dedicated to the three daughters of Suzuna Ono Makoto, otherwise known as the Sanshōjin, or the three female deities. These Shinto deities are the goddesses of seas and storms, which makes sense since the shrine is always in water, and it kind of looks like it's floating in water. That's like the design of it, so it looks like it's floating on top of the water rather than like in water.
I didn't even notice that. Okay.
The Kiyomori believe the goddess to be the manifestations of canon. Therefore, the island was understood as the home of the Bodhisattva, which is part of the Shinto religion. In Japanese, the word Ikusuzuma translates to the island dedicated to the gods. The island itself is also considered to be a god, which is why the shrine was built on the outskirts of the island to kind of welcome, you know, the god in. And then the one in Epcot sits along the World Showcase and perfectly frames the spaceship Earth when you look through it from the Japan Pavilion. Mm-hmm. That's just a note from me. That's just my note. That's not from anyone else.
But it does.
All right, so now if we're standing in front of the shrine and then we turn around, the whole area of the Japanese Pavilion is very loosely based on the 7th century Hoyuji Temple. This is a Buddhist temple that was once one of the powerful seven great temples in Ikigura, Nara Prefecture, Japan. Its full name is Hoyu Gakamonzi, or Learning Temple of Flourishing Law, the complex serving as both a seminary and a monastery. So this is kind of combining that both, again, the torii is the Shinto part of the religion, and then the pagoda specifically is part of the Buddhism part of the religion. So the temple was founded by, the actual temple in Japan, not the one in Epcot, obviously. I guess that's pretty obvious. But the temple was founded by Prince Shotoku in 607, like throwing dating real far back. But according to the Nihon Shoki, in 670, so only like 60 years later, all the buildings were burned down by lightning. Reconstructed at least 1300 years ago, the Kondo, which is the main hall, is widely recognized as the world's oldest wooden building, which is pretty cool. Huh? A fire way back when in 670, another fire on January 26, 1949, also destroyed much of the Kondo and destroyed a mural of the Asuka period, which was a national treasure in Japan. Mm-hmm. And this truly shocked the Japanese so much that based on this accident, January 26 now is Fire Prevention Day in Japan. So quite a shame that we had to lose that piece of culture due to a fire. So, but I guess that's what happens when you have a bunch of wooden structures.
Wooden, yes, if everything's all wood.
Yeah, everything's a bit vulnerable.
Always take that chance.
For sure. Oh. In 1993, Hoyuji Temple, along with Hokukiji, was registered as Japan's first UNESCO World Heritage Site under the name name of the Buddhist monuments in the Hoyuzi area. A tree ring conducted in 2001 revealed that the Shanbashiri of the five-story pagoda was cut down in 594 before it burned in 670. So, I mean, like, it was cut down in 594, which is wild if you think about it. Like, how long that building has been standing.
Standing.
And how old that tree is. So, the current temple area is made up of two areas, the Sayin in the west and the Toin in the east. The western part of the temple contains the Kondo, which is that main hall, the main sanctuary hall, and the temple's five-story pagoda. In the Toin area, it holds the octagonal Yumadono Hall, the Hall of Dreams is what that stands for, or what that translates to, and sits 122 meters east of the Sayin area. The complex also contains monks' quarters, lecture halls, libraries, and dining areas. So I wanted to point out this whole area and kind of go through the history, because when you look at the structure of the architecture of the buildings, what the store and the restaurant is kind of on like the right side if you're facing the pavilion, it's kind of all looks like these buildings in this area. So that's kind of why I want to shout it out. The only thing we don't have is that octagonal, that like octagon type building that they have there. So that's the one that they didn't do. But yeah, the buildings are like, I would say, loosely based on that type of architecture. All right, let's go to the pagoda. So the five-story pagoda located in the Sayin area in Japan stands at 32.45 meters in height, which is 122 feet tall. And again, is one of the oldest wooden buildings in the world. The wood used in the central pillar or axis mundi of the pagoda is estimated through a dendrochronological analysis tree to have been felled in 594. So basically they can look at the rings of the tree that is part of the structure and determine when the tree was cut down, which again, 594, wild. At its base, a relic believed to be the fragment of the bones of Buddha is enshrined, and around it, four sculpted scenes from the life of Buddha face in the four cardinal directions. The pagoda is five stories, and there is no access to the interior, which apparently is very common for most pagodas, that you don't actually access the interior. So there's only a few pagodas in Japan, or in the general sense for Buddhist pagodas, that you can access. And this is because it's housing relics of Buddha and usually other treasures in it.
Okay,
so it's kind of almost
that.
Like a shrine to a certain extent. If there is access, it's only usually to the first floor that you can walk around a little bit. You can't like climb the floors or anything like that. And Epcot, again, we have a smaller replica of this type of pagoda. And like the real pagoda, it all too has no access to the interior,
right.
Which I found that to be really interesting because I didn't know that actually. I have always wondered why you couldn't enter that building, or like what was inside the pagoda.
Why it was made without
an
entry, right.
I was like, how come there's no shows in there? How come they don't do anything in there or anything? But that's why you don't actually enter pagodas in real life either, because they're used as, again, usually housing some kind of relic of Buddha in there. So I thought that was really interesting. All right, so that's kind of going through some of the buildings and the history of the actual buildings themselves. So let's move on to our pavilion in Epcot. So the attractions. So in there are two main attractions you can do in the Japanese pavilion. There's the Bijutsuki-kan, an exhibition gallery hosting long-term exhibits on Japanese art and culture. Its current presentation, Kawi Life, features a look at Japan's culture of fute. So this is sort of in the back of, say, of the pavilion. It's kind of a, like, say, off the beaten path. Like, you could walk right past it and not realize you just walk past a door that has, like, a whole museum sort of in it. But if you're in the back, there's sort of, like, this food section of, like, the gift shop, and it's kind of right in front of that food section that you can then walk into and then walk through this whole exhibit. It is a really cool exhibit. I've walked through it a couple different times. And again, the Kawaii Life is also really interesting, too. I kind of like that they have this because the general pavilion itself really leans itself more towards that ancient Japanese culture rather than the modern Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. I would say the store and that exhibit kind of leans more towards modern Japanese culture.
Yes.
For instance, modern Japanese culture, there's lots of things that are super popular that, again, just based on like the ancient world, you wouldn't really think about some of the things that got going on now. So I like how they're trying to bring in a little bit more of that modern stuff. The other attraction is the DuckTales World Showcase Adventure, which started in 2022. And this had replaced the Kim Possible World Showcase Adventure and then the Agent P's World Showcase Adventure. All of this to say, they just take part in the World Showcase Adventure in general. All right, let's go to some shopping. So the main shopping is the Mitsukoshi Department Store. This store is separated into four zones: festivity, silence, harmony, and interest, and sells many Japanese items, including clothing, jewelry, books, manga, anime items like posters and other things, and toys. This store truly does, I feel like, have it all.
It has a little bit of everything.
Items. Yeah. They say it has even been expanded in recent years to include far greater variety than ever before. More specifically, a greater portion of the store now sells Japanese pop culture related items, presumably to take advantage of the growing interest in these types of products in America. And to this date, this is the only remaining branch of the Mitsukoshi located in North America following the closure of the Mitsukoshi's New York City location. So this is the only store in the US now, which is kind of interesting. I didn't even know they had another location in New York City, if I'm being super honest. So I feel like this store has so many items, which is really cool. And that's why I really like it too. And again, a lot of those, I say like more modern items, again, like a lot of the things to anime, to pop culture.
Right, when you first walk in, it's all the anime and all that kind of stuff. Then you go into all the Japanese items and you go into all the clothing and
they
stuff.
They also
and
have high quality jewelry here as well, like the luxury jewelry that's also sold here, especially pearls. Of course, Japan is, you know,
known for its pearls.
Yeah, Japan is an island, so mm-hmm. they have lots of access to water. So yeah, so mm-hmm. you know, Japanese oysters is a huge thing. So you can still do the Japanese oyster pearl thing where you, like, you know, the pearls are placed in those oysters.
Right.
You can pay, they like open the oyster and like you find the pearl and it's like so exciting.
Right.
And then you can pay more money to put that pearl into a piece of jewelry, like a ring or a necklace or earrings.
People get so
like
excited.
That.
They started doing it again because it was off for a while
they
during
did,
COVID.
Yes.
But yes.
It is a huge attraction. People mm-hmm. really love it. It's always fun when you're in there too, when they're yelling, being like, we found a pearl, as if the pearl wasn't
there to
begin with.
Especially if it was a big,
with.
Nice one. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? So I wonder if they judge based on like who's coming up, if they're like, oh, we should give them a big one. Like they look like they'll pay
extra.
But how
do they know what pearls are in there?
They probably know. I mean, like, let's be real. They have to place those pearls in there ahead of time. There is no way that they're just finding them. I haven't done it myself. My brother and his ex-girlfriend did it. So I should have asked him how they found it.
Yeah.
But I really am really interested in like pearl culture and stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's a very specific way that you extract a pearl from an oyster. And I cannot imagine they're doing that in that store in Epcot. I'm sorry. That pearl is placed in the
right
front.
I've never watched it up close. It didn't really interest me enough.
I'm also going
to
argue that those
it.
Oysters are not alive. It's like those are not living oysters.
Oh,
you know?
They have already been pre.
Yeah, those oysters are probably just shells. It's like those aren't real oysters. So because I mean like that tank, I don't think, I don't know. Again, I'm not sure. This is not verified.
Just say the
my
chance
assumption.
Of finding an oyster every
but I just
time.
Know like oysters do live in a specific environment. It is not easy to just extract a pearl from an oyster to keep the oyster healthy so that it doesn't actually hurt the oyster in any way. And so again, oysters can usually only produce one pearl a year. So I mean, like, how many oysters do they really have in there to producing multiple pearls in a day? So not to ruin the magic for anyone, but not to be the cynic here. I do love that they have that because I do think that's super fun. And again, a nod to Japanese culture that pearls
and
oysters
very popular, so.
Yes, are a big part of the overall Japanese culture. So I do like that. Again, the store, it really is great. Lots of stuff in the store. Again, they have all these different rooms and sections. I have little bowls in there. They have like a whole home section. They have places where you can get chopsticks and
I love the
Japanese clothing.
The traditional clothing, the robes.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite room.
No, for sure. No, I love it all too. And I think, I think this is one of the best stores, honestly, going to. So never, always make sure you head into that store for sure. All right, let's talk about some entertainment. So the main entertainment that the Japanese Pavilion has is the Matsuriza Taiko Drummers. So these drummers will be right outside of the pagoda and they're Japanese storytellers. And again, the history of these drummers is all traditionally a woman. So it's always women who perform these like special drumming type of dances that they do. So it's really cool that they have that. Those shows aren't really that long, I would say. They're maybe like 15 minutes total or something like that. So it's great because you can come see it and then you can leave. You can walk past and just like hear the music, which is really fun. They are very entertaining. They're interactive with the audience. Like, you know, they'll point to people and you can kind of clap along and stuff. So it's super fun. So I definitely recommend checking out the drummers. All right, now for some dining. There's actually a lot of dining
there
options.
Is more
you're
than
coming,
you think.
You're
yes.
coming to Japan to eat, let's be real. So the main restaurant is the Tappan Edo, which is a teppanyaki style restaurant, meaning that the food is cooked right in front of you at the table. So basically it's hibachi. So I feel like that's the word that in America we tend to use. The restaurant is called Tappan Edo. The restaurant is directly above and connected to the Mitsukoshi department store. The decor and theming is intended to reflect the vivaciousness of the Edo period. Foods that are cooked on the table are steaks, chicken, shrimp, scallops, and vegetables. You can also get select sushi rolls, miso soup, edamame, and tempura as like an appetizer. And they also have some ice cream flavors as well and different like mousses for dessert. It also said the kids' meal is served in monorail shaped boxes, which I thought was funny because I didn't know that. So I was like, oh, well, that's kind of cute. So the other main restaurant that's in this area is the Shikisai, which is sushi. So it's like sushi izakaya. This was formerly Tokyo Dining. So Tokyo Dining, basically the area was split into Tappan Edo on the left side and Tokyo Dining
Tokyo
on the right
dining,
side.
Right, when
so
it
yeah,
was.
Now it's Shikisai. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of very similar to what Tokyo Dining was, but has a much more an emphasis on sushi. So they serve a lot more sushi options. I will say me and my mom don't eat sushi. Mm-hmm. My dad and my brother do eat sushi, but if I was going to go through some of the sushis they have, but honestly, I'm not really one to talk about that because I'm not familiar with sushi. But they serve, I feel like, every sushi imaginable. You can get all different sushi, sashimi, everything. But they do still have an entree menu with some meats, rice, and noodles if you don't want to eat sushi. So it looks like, it kind of looks like the same menu as Tokyo Dining, just expanded on the sushi side.
Sushi,
and now they're really advertising it as a sushi
restaurant. When we ate Tokyo Dining, even that menu was very limited.
For sure, yeah. All right, so the next restaurant is a new restaurant. It's called Takumi Tei. It just opened recently, if you're listening this in live. Here, dining plan meals are not accepted here. So if you have the Disney dining plan, it is not accepted. This st- style of eating is called omakase, meaning leave it up to the chef. So there are two omakase menus. You can get kiku or hasu. Kiku is the omnivore choice, starting at $250, not including tax or tip per adult. And hasu, the plant-based one, starts at $150, not including tax or tip. The dishes can include Japanese A5 wagyu steak, lobster tempura, seasonal sashimi, and strawberry yuzu sobe. There is a loose dress code for this restaurant. It says that stating that the clothing should be clean, neat, and in good condition, and there is no swimwear allowed, which I thought was very interesting because I don't really know people to wear swimwear to Epcot. But I just mean swimwear. It's not like there's any like water rides really in Epcot. There's not that many splash pads in Epcot. So I was just surprised that they called out no swimwear specifically because you don't really see people wearing swimwear in Epcot. It's not really a place to have swimwear.
No.
So I just thought that was interesting. They also did say on their online that is 8 years old and up. So they're kind of saying you need to be a little bit older to eat here. Not as bad as the restaurant in the French Pavilion that's 10 years old and up. Uh-huh. So a little bit older for that. But yeah, but 8 years old and up here. But obviously this is a very high-end menu. It's a very high-end dining experience. You don't always know what you're going to receive. Again, that's the whole style of omakase, is leave it up to the chef. So you kind of pay for either eating meat or not eating meat. And then the chef is going to cook for you what they will. I do like that they have separated out the omnivore and the plant-based though, because some of the other restaurants that do this don't do that. So it makes it a bit trickier to actually go to those restaurants. So I feel like I would actually be more inclined to do this in the plant-based because I do eat basically everything that is plant-based. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I actually would like the food because I do love Asian food, but for $150, not including tax and tip, very expensive. So I'm not sure if we'll be going here, but I haven't really heard that many reviews about it.
I haven't heard anything about it, but then because I don't eat that kind of food, I would never
I haven't heard many reviews, but it's also very new though too. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's just not that many reviews out there as of right now. So definitely check it out though if you're interested. All right, some other places to eat here is the Katsura Grill. This is the counter service restaurant located on the hill adjacent to the pagoda. Mm-hmm. You kind of get to go up the Japanese gardens
very
when
pretty.
You're walking up there. Mm-hmm. It is very pretty. It's very lovely. They do have a little bit of seating up there too. They also have the Kabuku Cafe, which is to the left of the pagoda. So if you're facing the pavilion, it's like almost at the edge of the pavilion. You honestly kind of would probably miss it. But they serve sushi and different like drinks and alcoholic drinks. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Garden House, which serves sake. So sake, of course, is a very popular drink in Japan. So if you want to get your sake, you can also go to the Garden House. This place always has a long line. Every place for alcoholic drinks in Japan always has a long line. lots of long lines for sure. And then also the last thing I just want to point out here too, because when I was talking about that garden, there is a little koi fish pond too in this area.
I love the koi fish pond.
I think it's very overlooked because people see that there's a pond, they see there's a beautiful Japanese garden, but you don't realize that there is a koi fish in
that
pond.
I know, we spend a lot of time in front of that pond.
I do. I love looking over and like looking at them. They're so cute in there. All right, so let's go to some planned attractions that were planned for this world or planned for this pavilion, but then not actually implemented.
Oh, okay.
There were numerous attractions planned and proposed. Only one of the attractions was constructed, but it was never actually implemented. So for years, Imagineers have considered building an indoor roller coaster attraction based on Japan's Mount Fuji. The attraction would have been designed similarly to the Matterhorn bobsleds from Disneyland, and the coaster would have housed an inside replica of Mount Fuji. At one point, they thought, like in the conception of this, that Godzilla would be maybe like attacking the cars or something like that, apparently. Fujifilm originally wanted to sponsor the ride in the early 1990s, but Kodak, who at the time was a major Epcot sponsor, convinced Disney to decline the sponsorship. Well, so then the Matterhorn-derived design elements survived to be incorporated into the Exhibition Everest at Disney's Animal Kingdom Park instead. But obviously, we never actually got this ride in Epcot, but we did get Exhibition Everest in Disney's Animal Kingdom. So we kind of worked out in that sense. I thought that was really fun that Kodak told Epcot, don't take the Fujifilm sponsorship. It's like, don't take our rival sponsorship. I wonder what those conversations look like of how they convinced them not to take a sponsorship to build a new ride. I think that's kind of interesting. But another proposed attraction was a walkthrough version of one of those Circle Vision type of shows.
Like China, yeah.
In which guests would board and walk through a Shinkansen, which is a bullet train in Japan, like one of those really fast bullet trains. And you would look through windows, which were actually like film screens that would show like the Japan's changing landscape. So
that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, so the train would have taken you through like the countryside, the cities, different places in Japan. So you kind of get the idea of like being on a bullet train and the idea of traveling through Japan. Kind of sad they actually didn't do that because I feel like that would have been kind of cool.
Interesting, yes.
So the one attraction that they planned and did build, but it was never implemented, was called Meet the World. This is actually in Disneyland Tokyo, apparently. And this was supposed to, again, be planned for the Japan Pavilion. Okay, so the Meet the World show buildings was constructed with the theater going to be on the second floor. However, due to miscalculations made in the building's design, the rotating theater put a lot of stress on the supporting beams. So for the attraction to be able to function safely, the show building would have had to have major rework done. So instead of doing that, and because Epcot's construction was already behind schedule, they decided to just move forward without the attraction. collection, and today the space is used for rehearsals and storage. Wow. So kind of wild.
That would have been cool to have another attraction the pavilions.
Like a whole theater was completely built and created.
It's a shame because all those concepts sounded really cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that's what I'm saying. I feel like they could have still maybe done that circle vision like room where, you know, you could pretend that you're on the Shinkansen, the bullet train. Because I think that would honestly be super cool. Mm-hmm. Again, I've never been to Japan before, so I feel like that's a big part of modern Japanese culture. Yes. Rather, again, this pavilion definitely leads more towards the ancient Japanese culture. My mom was holding her kitten in her lap and she's just so adorable right now. Our little baby girl. So
must be part of it.
I know, right? So yeah, because I definitely, it's funny how each pavilion kind of goes through the ebbs and flows of like what's more modern, mm-hmm. what's more ancient, like how they kind of cross through. Like for instance, the French pavilion really just leans itself just to Paris for the most part, not really to the rest of the French country. But it's like other ones, like the Italian pavilion kind of goes all over Italy, North and South Italy. They kind of combine the different architectures and the styles and, mm-hmm. you know, the different landmarks and stuff. So it's interesting how this one focuses a lot on ancient Japan, but also then has those touches of modern and contemporary Japan too. Especially with like the food and the drinks, especially because mm-hmm. I feel like that's the fan favorite, of course, is sushi. Everyone loves sushi.
I know, so. Everybody loves sushi. Everybody loves buying all the pop culture. It does. It goes from one to the other, which is really cool. We always spend time, as much as we don't eat the food because we're not big sushi eaters. Daddy's the only sushi eater really that would love that. We do spend a lot of time in the Japan Pavilion.
Yeah, we do. No, I love it. All right, that was kind of all the notes I had for mm-hmm. the Japan Pavilion. So definitely
I learned a couple of new things.
There.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. It was really cool to see where like the buildings and mm-hmm. where some of the things are kind of based on, and going into those histories of how it's amazing because, you know, America is such a young country, right? So going into some of these more ancient times of like how old Japan is, how old China is, how old some of these other European countries are. And here in America, we're like 200 years old.
Right. when they do the festival that we're going to,
the Flower and Garden,
when they have the bonsai trees in front.
Yes. Yeah.
They have that whole setup of the bonsai, different bonsai trees that have been growing. And some of them are a couple of hundred years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is amazing to me that somebody's been, you know, pruning them and trimming them and keeping them and, you know, and they have lived that long. Bonsai trees are thriving and they're a couple of hundred years old each.
Yeah, I know. It's truly amazing.
I love to stop and look at those.
No, for sure. And I do love Japanese culture in mm-hmm. like a general sense. So for instance, I know a really popular TV show at the time right now is Shogun on Hulu. And that takes place in ancient mm-hmm. Japan. I've been really enjoying that show as well. Mm-hmm. And the characters do speak Japanese and, you know, English throughout the show and stuff. So it's really cool to see, again, mm-hmm. some of those elements from that ancient Japan here in Epcot.
Culture,
and get to learn about it too, mm-hmm. which is really great to learn, just learn more. So, all right. So now this is normally when we would transition into some Disney news, but we're going to skip Disney news since this is a pre-recorded podcast. Since the week that this podcast comes out is May 6th, right? We are in Disney World right now.
Yes, right now we're going to be in Disney World.
So we're
World.
Pre-recording this podcast, but when this
Looking
comes out,
at all these wonderful things we're talking
I know,
about.
We're going to be walking past the Japan Pavilion right now, thinking about how that pagoda is empty because it is a Buddhist shrine to different Buddha relics. Mm-hmm. So instead, though, we will shout out some Disney birthdays. The first up on May 9th is Kermit the Frog. So happy birthday to Kermit the Frog, May 9th. And on May 12th, we have Rapunzel. So happy birthday also to Rapunzel. Love her. And then also some personal birthdays too in our life. On May 7th is one of my close friend Caitlin's birthday. So mm-hmm. happy birthday to Caitlin. On May 8th, it's my cousin's birthday, Brian. So happy birthday to Brian. And a really huge shout out to on May 12th is Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers here, to my mother sitting across me right now. Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Thank you.
As we record this episode like over a month in advance.
Yes. And every day should be Mother's Day.
Yes, every day truly is Mother's Day, but happy Mother's Day to my mom and happy Mother's Day to every other mother who's listening.
Yes, happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Also, I'm a cat mom, so.
That's right. Yes, well.
Not the same as being a real mom.
No.
All right, and now we can transition to our final segment, which is our Disney memory. Do you have a Disney memory for today's podcast?
My Disney memory is probably eating at the Japan restaurant for the first time. We had not eaten there in a very long time. You know, we had never eaten there before. It was just the three of us, you, me, and Daddy. You were a little older, so it was easier to go there. But the menu was very, very limited, I remember. But the staff was so sweet.
Yeah.
I remember the girl that served us. She was a young Japanese girl, and they wear all the actual attire.
The kimonos.
It was just such a wonderful experience to go there that I would love to go again, because the memory is that we had a good meal, we had great service, mm-hmm. and when we walked out of there, even though it was kind of hard to pick and choose and find stuff to eat for us because we're a little bit more picky.
Well, I was okay because, again, I eat anything that's plant-based for the most part, and I love Asian food, but it was one of those things where it's like, there was like one option. It's like, well, I'll have the one option for me.
Right. So, yeah, there was no like picking.
But that's just because we don't eat sushi. If we ate, there are vegetarian sushi rolls.
If we ate sushi, we'd have no problem. Daddy had no problem.
Yeah, there are vegetarian sushi rolls. I just don't like sushi personally.
Right. So and I'm not a big rice eater either. So it's like, for me, it was a little bit tougher. But I have to say that I was willing to do it because I wanted to do the atmosphere. And the memory of that restaurant, I have to say, was a good one.
Yeah, and Japan is one of the more notorious pavilions to have a good viewing of whatever the nighttime show
is. Oh, yes. If you eat there, especially, you're allowed to go and stand out on
their balcony. Yeah, there's like a little balcony. You can watch the fireworks. You have a pretty good view of the lagoon as well. So if there's anything going on in the lagoon, like right now for Luminous. I always want to say Lumonious, but it's Luminous. Yes. I keep adding letters to this word. I'm not sure why. Yeah, but the water features in Luminous, you could definitely probably see them too from that balcony. And even just from the Japan Pavilion in general, because again, because they have, let me scroll back up to my pronunciation, because they have the Ikusuzuma Jinja there, there's not that many trees right there because it's, you know,
it has no trees next to it.
Yeah, you're just going to be looking at the Ikusuzuma Jinja. So that's what's really great about the area, because that you can kind of see past it and see the water.
A lot of people will camp out on their steps because they, you know, they think it's going to give them a good view and stuff on their steps. But if you eat there, you are allowed to go up on their balcony that goes around the restaurant.
Yeah. All right. So for my Disney memory, so I talked about before, I love the koi fish pond. So right in that area too, that is where the great house is to get the sake. So if you're going to get sake, it's right there. And I remember in that little area, this is so random, there are three trees that are planted there. But for some reason, they had just planted one of the trees there. So it had a little fence around it. It was so cute because all these people were waiting in line, crowding around this little tree with this little fence. And I was like, that's why they had to put that little fence right there. Because people keep trampling these little trees that they're trying to grow in this area. But because the line for the sake is so long, they have to protect this tree. But I thought it was so funny. I think I have it in a vlog somewhere. I'm not sure if I took a photo or not. Because I was just like, why does this tree just have this little tiny little fence?
To keep people from trampling, poor thing.
I don't know why. I just remember that. I just thought it was really funny.
That's a cute memory.
But again, all of the lines for the alcohol in Japan are always long. I feel like even compared to some of the other pavilions, like I feel like Japan, France, and the United Kingdom tend to have the longest lines for alcohol in comparison to some of the other ones. I'm not really sure that why that is. Maybe the other ones just move quicker when they're serving
you. I could tell by the United Kingdom, that's beer. So everybody loves beer.
Yeah, everyone gets beer there. But even like Germany and Italy, I find the lines are never as long. Yeah. I feel like France always has long lines because I think people want the French wine. Like French wine's a huge thing.
Right.
And I think again, sake is very specific. Mm-hmm. So you have to go to Japan for that. Whereas I guess maybe the other ones, you can kind of get different things at the same time.
Right.
Although I think sometimes Mexico depends. Again, I think Mexico, they're just pumping out those margaritas real quick.
Oh God. Well, those lines are getting longer and longer in Mexico.
Yeah. And I think they can just move faster depending on what the drink is.
What they're drinking or how they're pouring.
I guess because sake is very small and very particular. So maybe they have to measure a little bit differently. So it just takes longer to serve.
Interesting.
Not really sure, but I have noticed that the Japanese lines tend to be longer than some of the other pavilions.
I don't drink sake. I've had it once or twice. I was not a fan.
I've actually never had it before.
Oh, not a fan.
Yeah, I've never had it.
Yeah. If you're not an alcohol drinker, sake's not for you.
I never had it. Would love maybe to try it one day, but
I've had it once or twice because when I used to work on Wall Street, we used to go out to the Japanese, and we've gone to traditional Japanese restaurants where you sit on the pillows
and you take your shoes
off the low tables and you're in your own private room.
I think they should do that in Epcot to do one of those.
Oh God, if they had that experience.
I feel like maybe they couldn't, because I feel like maybe people's feet would smell after walking around in the hot park.
I would think that because you have people coming in and out of the park, it could be a little harder because that's more of a serene kind of experience. Like I said, when I've done it in the city, in New York City, it was a serene experience. I mean,
Asian culture in general is very big on like cleanliness.
Yes, cleanliness and serenity and, you know, different things like that. And
for sure. But yeah, but I do remember that little tree. So always thinking of the little tree. Now when you go there, no longer has the fence and it is bigger.
Bigger tree. You have to point it out when we go next
week. The tree is growing. So hopefully it's still there. Watch me go, it's like empty.
I know, you go there and they say somebody stepped on
the tree
and
didn't make it.
Didn't make it.
Yeah, because there are three trees in that area that could tell they're trying to grow.
We'll have to check on this tree when we go to Japan.
When we go. When we're there right now.
We'll be checking on the tree. We'll report back next week. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you everyone so much for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. I hope someone learned something new about the Japan Pavilion.
I did.
Definitely. Well, definitely let us know on our Instagram, Spaceship Earth Design, what you may have learned that's new, what I missed, other elements. There's lots of things that are packed into these pavilions. That's hard to go through every single detail all at once. So let us know what your favorite aspect of the Japan Pavilion is. And also let us know what other attractions do you think they should add to the Japan Pavilion? Because I think it would be really cool.
I wish they did those. I mean, they have the area, obviously, if they're using it for storage and stuff like that, they still have the area to do something.
Yeah, or add even some kind of like walkthrough exhibit or something like that. Maybe on like samurai culture or something.
I know, because we love the walkthrough that's there.
Yeah, so I would love if they added, you know, something like that to the pavilion. But I would love to hear what you would add. Make sure you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And if you're on YouTube, you can leave a comment below. But otherwise, we'll see you real soon.
Bye-bye.